Okay, thank you, Liz. So, like I said, my name is Brian Moy, and thank you for the opportunity to present today. And I'll be talking about high-scale, high-resolution modeling of climate change in Los Angeles and the implications for human health impacts. So, as Simona mentioned before, we would like to acknowledge the partnerships that we've had going on, and this is particularly with the Los Angeles County Department of Public Health, so Director Angelo Palomo, Elizabeth Rhodes and Charlene Contreras, as well as many of our colleagues at the Fielding School of Public Health, none of which this would have been possible. And particularly, we also wanted to shout out to Dr. Alex Hall, who's at the bottom, and he is in the Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences Department. And without his work of dynamical downscale modeling, which is high-resolution modeling, none of this would have been possible. And there are no financial relationships or commercial interests relevant to this presentation either, so we are all self-funded. So, just to give you a kind of roadmap of what I'll be talking about today in particular, first I'll be talking about climate impacts in Los Angeles, then I'll be talking about the challenges to climate adaptation planning in Los Angeles, and then I'll focus specifically on downscale modeling as a tool for localized planning, and then how we used a hazard vulnerability analysis tool to kind of prioritize our climate risks. So as Simona so graciously mentioned, we have a collaboration between UCLA and the Los Angeles County Department of Public Health. And it is through this release of downscale modeling provided by Dr. Alex Hall that kind of jump-started our talks with LADPH to think about climate adaptation planning. And the overarching goal of the climate adaptation plan is to reduce climate impacts while building healthy, sustainable, and resilient communities. Between UCLA and the Los Angeles Department of Public Health, we have three specific collaboration priorities. And as Simona mentioned, our first priority was the Climate and Health Workshop Series, which was to kind of disseminate the information between UCLA to the Los Angeles County Department of Public Health about climate and health information. The second priority was to develop regional strategies to mitigate climate change and improve resiliency within communities. And then the third priority is to identify opportunities to partner with other individuals and organizations within Los Angeles County. So, to begin, Los Angeles will experience a variety of climate impacts in the near future. And this involves more extreme heat days, this involves worse air quality, so if anyone knows about Los Angeles, they know that we have awful air quality, and that's predicted to get substantially worse. We also have predictions for coastal sea level rise, increases in the number of wildfires, increases in the number of vector-borne disease cases, as well as distribution. And also, if you've heard in the news at all, California is under severe drought, and drought is also predicted to last for a much longer period of time. And then we also have impacts on food systems. So, if you didn't know, food is actually, a lot of agriculture is actually grown within LA County, and the lack of water is going to be impacted as well. So food systems are going to be affected, and health systems are something that hasn't necessarily been talked about in great detail, but for a lot of areas, the health systems are going to be actually stressed even more, given the increases in the number of patients that are brought in because of climate impact issues. So that's something to think about. And when we think about these climate impacts, where you are in Los Angeles actually matters substantially. And what do I mean by this? So as an example, on the left, I actually have a map of Los Angeles County. And I've actually taken and blown up a small section of the county. And as you can see just from the picture on the right, Los Angeles County has a very diverse geography. So we have, as you can see, coastlines. We have valleys. We have mountains. We also have forests. We have two deserts. We have a variety of different geographical features within our boundaries. And associated with this, I'm just using temperature as an example right now, and I might sound like a weather forecaster, but we have nice 70 and 80 degree weather along the coastlines, and as you move more inland, it starts to warm up. So we have 80 degrees within like Hollywood or Beverly Hills, and then as you get closer to the mountains, we have close to 90 degree, 100 degree weather. And then within the mountains, it gets substantially cooler just because of higher elevation. And just from this map, I'm not even showing you the hottest parts of the county where temperatures can exceed constantly over 110 degrees. And just from this one snapshot, and I took it from October 22nd, which was just last month, and this is actually a bit warmer than it typically is in October, so don't think that California has beautiful weather all the time, because it doesn't. But there's about a 30-degree difference in climate just in this one small section. And that's very, very important to think about between the coastline in Santa Monica, which is 70 degrees, and within Pasadena, where it can be 100 degrees. And so thinking about climate impacts, these microclimates, where it's a different temperature compared to its surroundings, are very, very important to think about when thinking about climate adaptation planning. In addition to the climate impacts and also these localized differences, other challenges exist. So for instance, in terms of size, Los Angeles County is actually about 4,000 square miles, which is, if you were to think about this, is larger than Rhode Island and Delaware combined. They also have, like I said before, a diverse geography. So we have mountains. We also have two islands that are within our county, deserts, valleys, rivers, and forests. And associated with these are the microclimates, which I mentioned. Politically speaking, we have 88 incorporated cities and numerous unincorporated areas as well, which means that we have a lot of entities to work with. Demographically, we also have, we also are the largest, the most populated county in the United States with over 10 million people. And associated with such a high population, we actually have very high ethnic populations as well. And in terms of climate modeling typically or historically has been a problem because it has not provided the high resolution that we need in order to kind of assess localized differences within LA County. So just go ahead and talking about that. Global climate models have typically been too coarse for regional climate adaptation planning. And if you're unfamiliar with global climate models, they're typically computational models that kind of estimate scientists' best understanding of climate, and they do a whole bunch of equations, and they split up the globe into 100 to 200 kilometer cells, for instance, and within each cell there's a bunch of numerous statistical equations that go on to kind of best estimate those features and provide information, like climate information. And as you can see, I kind of tried to demonstrate that specifically here. And at 100 to 200 kilometer resolution, we have huge squares which can cover cities, for instance, such as Santa Monica, and also Beverly Hills is in that one square. We also have downtown LA, which has which is within one square, and we also have other areas that have mountains and valleys incorporated into there. And one thing to mention is that if we were to just have these one square for each area, it provides a homogeneous climate. So even though we know specifically in LA, which I mentioned before, that we have different temperatures, relatively close to one another, the typical global climate models would give one specific temperature for each cell. So that would typically just kind of overlook the regional differences and microscale differences that we would want for LA County at least. And this prevents us from actually being able to look at the neighborhood level assessments, which is something that's very, very important for Los Angeles County. But as I mentioned before, through Dr. Alex Hall's work with assessments, who accomplished looking at very, very high resolution models. So he's been able to do high scale resolution down to 2 kilometers, which is very, 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 very refined, and is actually about like 1.6 miles for each cell, which actually provides us neighborhood level information. And the way he does that is basically he actually takes the output from global climate models, and then he actually puts it into an even more strict computational system, which can take months to run just for one of them. And then the output gives us a very, very fine and detailed resolution from which we can work with. And for the Climate Change in Los Angeles Region project, he actually looked at 2 greenhouse gas emission scenarios. He used business as usual, which means that if we were to just continue our current trajectory of greenhouse gas emissions. And then he used a mitigation strategy, which is kind of focusing on if we were to curb our emissions substantially, how would that look? And this is just an example of some of the output. So this is visualizing some of the output from his downscale modeling. And this is showing the number of hot days for various neighborhoods in Los Angeles. And this may seem a little confusing, but just know that the average for the black bar is the average number of days from 1981 to 2000. And just to kind of explain, as the legend, the size of that, so if any bar is equal to that size in particular, it's just kind of a reference, then that would mean that on average for that specific area, they would have approximately 60 days. If there's less, if it's a smaller black bar, then there's less than 60 days. If there's more, then there's more than 60 days. And this is just from the period of 1981 to 2000. Now, where it gets interesting is because when he did the mid-century projections, so just saying for 2041 to 2060, you can see that for the red bars, and this is just on top of existing 60 days, so this is altogether, if it's the height of the red and the black in the legend, then that's approximately 100 days. So as you can see, for certain areas, such as Porter Ranch, where I can't move the little arrow, but next to, right next to it, Porter Ranch is predicted to experience over approximately 100 days of extreme heat events. And these are actually days that he considers to be 95 degrees or hotter. Santa Clarita also, San Fernando also, and for coastal areas, it's not going to be as hot, which is typically the norm because it's relatively cool along the coastlines. But this is important because this kind of shows how downscale modeling can look at a specific climate impact and provide a neighborhood level assessment for which neighborhoods are going to be affected. And this is very, very important for downscale modeling. And it's important to mention that not all climate impacts have neighborhood level downscale models for Los Angeles. The Climate Change in Los Angeles Region Project does it for temperature, and we also do it for wildfires. For air quality, we have the South Coast Air Quality Management District, which has done a localized assessment. And then the California Coastal Commission has done it for sea level rise. But for other areas that are more complex in particular, such as vector-borne diseases, water systems, food systems, and health systems, we don't have the available knowledge or information to do these downscale assessments. And so when we think about climate adaptation planning, while it's important to know for each climate impact which neighborhood is going to be most affected, we know that in just thinking about it, neighborhoods are going to experience a multitude of different climate impacts. And so that is the other piece that we need to think about. When we do have a neighborhood that we know is going to experience, for instance, wildfires, extreme heat, and poor air quality, which one is going to be more important? Even though it may be affected, even though they may experience an extreme heat, they could just be experiencing a few days, and that in itself is not necessarily a high risk. Wildfires could be potentially a more hazardous thing to that specific community. And so when we think about that, we need to think about how to actually do that. And at UCLA, with our Climate and Health Working Group, we've actually developed, adapted a hazard vulnerability analysis tool, which I'll get to in a little bit. But the reason that I want to focus on kind of thinking about identifying and prioritizing these climate impacts for individual neighborhoods is because neighborhood actually matters. So neighborhood identity matters. If we were to issue, for instance, a heat warning for the circle, for everyone that's within the circle, neighborhoods such as Beverly Hills or Santa Monica, where it's typically cooler and has historically been cooler, would not react to that. Would not react to that specific heat warning, even though it may pertain to them. If we were to actually be able to have the knowledge and say that for Beverly Hills and Santa Monica, that these areas are at high risk now and in the future for extreme heat days, then we can actually cater our messages specifically to the neighborhoods than rather regionally for a larger area. And when thinking about Los Angeles and what people listen to, people really, really like it when you mention their neighborhood versus just saying Los Angeles in general. People take a sense of pride in their neighborhoods. So that's something that we have to take into consideration. So as I mentioned before, we've been able to kind of prioritize climate impacts through a hazard vulnerability analysis tool. And the tool was actually created by Kaiser Permanente, and it was it's a systematic way that kind of allows us to assess hazards and assess the capacity of health systems to address these hazards, right? And so what we've done is we've actually adapted it and used it to kind of assess climate impacts and assess the public health how prepared public health is to address these climate impacts, right? And the beauty of using the hazard vulnerability analysis is that it allows us to use qualitative, quantitative, and downscale modeling projections and put it into a systematic framework that allows us to assess it on four different areas. And this is probability, so the likelihood that the event will happen, the human health impact, so the probability that death or casualties might occur, community impact, which kind of focuses on infrastructural damage or displacement in the instance of wildfires and we have communities that need to be displaced, and then also preparedness, so how prepared or how much pre-planning have we done for the specific climate impact. And we rank each of these four categories on a scale of 0 to 3. So 0 meaning it's not applicable, and then 3 being highest, right? And what we do is actually, once we assess them within these four areas, we're actually provided a risk percentage. And the risk percentage will help to indicate how much of a risk there is. So the higher the risk, the higher the percentage risk, the higher the risk it is for that specific neighborhood. And therefore, we're actually able to rank these climate impacts for individual neighborhoods. So, this is actually a hazard vulnerability analysis that we did for a specific neighborhood. And I should mention that whenever we mention a hazard vulnerability analysis, it's for one individual neighborhood, not for the county at large, but for one specific neighborhood. And in this neighborhood in general, as I mentioned before, we assessed it on 8 different climate impacts, as you can see on the left-hand side. So extreme heat, wildfire, water impacts, food systems, health systems, air quality, coastal sea level rise, and vector-borne diseases. And then we ranked them, and then we assessed them on the four different areas that I mentioned too. So probability, human health impact, community impact, and preparedness. And as you can see, for this particular one, there's zeros across for coastal sea level rise because this community is not next to the coast. It's actually very, very inland. So that would make sense that it's not applicable that you have any ranking for that. But as you can see at the end, we get a risk percentage. And some of you may be wondering why we don't have it equaling 100%. But that's because we know that climate impacts are not mutually exclusive. So you can just because you have one doesn't necessarily mean that you will not have another. You can actually have multiple climate impacts that are going to be affecting. And it's good to know which ones are going to be very, very severe. But it allows us to kind of assess them systematically with one another. So, kind of demonstrating this, we did a case study of four specific neighborhoods within Los Angeles to kind of try and demonstrate the climate vulnerability for each area. And so we chose two coastal areas, which were Santa Monica and Wilmington Harbor City. And we chose those two just because they kind of... they were similar in terms of population and land area, but they varied in terms of demographics as well as socioeconomic status. And then we also wanted to choose two inland areas. So we chose Sylmar, which is typically very, very rural, and Southeast Los Angeles, which is very dense. As you can see from the population, there's a drastically large difference between Sylmar and Southeast Los Angeles, but they're comparable in land area. And what we found for these specific areas was very, very interesting. So for the coastal areas, particularly Santa Monica, we found that there are only moderate impacts to this highly, highly affluent community. So as you can see on the risk on the bottom, I provided a kind of a key of risk percentages. So 75 and above is considered high risk, 50 and above is considered moderate, 25 and above is considered low, and then green is good, right? So as you can see for Santa Monica, the first, the highest impact is going to be water impacts, and that's primarily just because a lot of their water that they obtain is from groundwater, and because of saltwater intrusion, a lot of their groundwater is going to be affected, so they really need to think about how they want to prepare for that. As you can see for the second is coastal sea level rise, and it's not really a huge issue because a lot of their infrastructure is more inland. But for Wilmington Harbor City, a lot of their necessary infrastructure, such as water reclamation, sewage systems, are actually very close to the coastline, and that is a moderate risk to them. So they need to think about, in the future with coastal sea level rise, what exactly are they going to do? Also, for Sylmar and Southeast Los Angeles, which were inland, we were thinking that they would have impacts to extreme heat. But what we actually found is that their very, very high risk for their health system impacts. And so they already have health systems that are continually stressed and understaffed. And we know that with future climate change, there are going to be increases in the number of cases that are going to be attending these hospitals, and that's going to stress the capacity for those hospitals even more, such that it's a very, very high priority, and they really need to think about alternative strategies to send people elsewhere for hospitals. Sylmar has a moderate risk for wildfires, and that's just because of its proximity to the Los Angeles National Forest. And Southeast Los Angeles has moderate problems for air quality, and that's just because of its proximity downtown and to a whole bunch of freeways. So as you can see, for each one, for each of these neighborhoods that we did a hazard vulnerability analysis, it provides us a specific ranking and allows us to kind of identify the specific climate impact that's going to be most impactful. And versus how we would typically do it, which was to generalize for the entire and try and prepare the entire county for all different types of impacts, we're not able to kind of systematically identify for each neighborhood what is going to be the most important and identify those vulnerable populations that we can work with to kind of build community resilience within these neighborhoods to climate impacts. So just kind of summarizing, academic and government partnerships are critical for climate action planning. And as you can see from my talk and Tamana's talk, that our partnership between UCLA and the Los Angeles County Department of Public Health has been very, very useful for us and also useful for each other in terms of developing this climate adaptation plan. Downscale projections or high-resolution projections at the neighborhood level can aid us in kind of telling us which neighborhoods are going to be impacted, but that's only half of the equation, where hazard vulnerability analysis provide us the rankings for which climate impact is going to be most important for each neighborhood. And then our next steps in terms of this project is going to be working with neighborhood organizations and trying to build more community resilience now that we've identified specific climate impacts that are going to be the most important to these neighborhoods. And with that, I would like to say thank you.